I think we're pretty much ready.
Hi, I'm Alex Geringas, composer of Trolls the Beat Goes On, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
Welcome to another episode of Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Jonathan
and Logan.
And in today's episode, we have a special guest with us. We have the composer Alex Geringas with us today. He's been very nice and been working with us for about the last 3 months. We've been playing tag trying to get this interview set up. So, Alex, thank you for working with us with this and being so patient.
Thank you so much for having me.
And just to give you a little idea, we tried to get April to come back in with this, who was one of our co-hosts in the past, since she music actually focus. Is a music-focused major in college. But that didn't work out, and then last month Alex's schedule didn't work out, so we're doing this tonight. So again, much thanks, Alex.
It's
awesome. been a wild ride, evidently. So,
oh my gosh.
But Alex, comes to us from actually Moscow, so he's a transplant like I am. I'm a transplant from Kansas, from Oklahoma. Even though I'm still in the States, I am a transplant to Kansas. So I kind of get the feeling sometimes that I'm a man without a country at times, I think.
But I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Just magnified.
But Alex, he comes to us from Russia. Is it still Russia? I don't know what it's called anymore since they've broken apart so much.
No, you know, I was born in Moscow, and then my parents relocated to Germany when I was 4.5.
Okay.
And 7 years ago, I relocated with my two kids and my amazing wife to LA.
Nice. So, big culture change there.
Yep.
Yes. So. But this is like, I really can relate to what you just said, you know, like home is for me where the heart is, home is where my wife is, my kids, and where work is, where my parents are, like, that is home.
True. I definitely agree with that. So, but like Alex said, he was in Germany, and it was Hamburg where he studied, and this is maybe a different route for most composers, but he was an actor, a playwright, stage director, studied composing in Hamburg as well. Yes. And you've done, and I'm going to try to describe this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Hanny and Nanny is a trilogy of movies done in Germany, and I kind of, when I looked at some of the trailers, it kind of looked like something that would be like on the Lizzie McGuire, Disney Channel, Nickelodeon type movies.
Yes, totally family entertainment genre.
Right. And you won the Bambi Award, which you said was the German equivalent of, was it kind of like a Emmy, or can you explain the Bambi Award that you won for that?
The Bambi Award is like a German, big German TV and film award. So they... Okay. I think here in America, there's nothing like that, because here we have either the Emmys or the Oscars,
right.
And Bambi is like a combined award. Like they have, like, you know, TV productions and film production they honor.
Okay.
So,
kind of right around there for the Emmys, maybe, or Golden Globes. And
Maybe Golden Globe is the most nearest to that.
And you mentioned you came over to the States. And the emphasis was on this was an interesting story, and if you want to go into that a little bit as well. But you're a publisher, and you're a composer as well as songwriter. Let me put that out there, too. So I forgot to mention the songwriter aspect, so I'll get that out there because it makes a difference with this story. But you can dive into it a little bit more. But your publisher pitched one of your songs called The Dark Side to Kelly Clarkson, and she was like, this is cool, let's cut it, and she made a single out of it.
There's a place that I know. It's not pretty there, and few have ever gone. If I show it to you now, will it make you run away?
It's absolutely crazy. That's exactly how it happens. Okay. How it happened.
Yeah. And it, was that the one that kept on playing on the radio when it was switching which radio station it was?
I don't know.
Maybe. It was good the first couple of times, but after you listen to it 100 times in a row.
Oh, no, you're thinking of a different song of hers.
Okay.
I know what you're thinking. Yeah, it's one of those where you sometimes when an artist gets a very big popular hit, they grind it into the ground.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was also
but no, that's something wasn't about the
other side, and they were switching radio stations to a different.
No, that was a different one. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. That was the one about her father.
Hello from the other side?
No, I don't know what that is.
Oh no, that's a completely different song, dude.
So you can tell we go down rabbit holes, Alex. So.
From
what I can say is Adele. That the Dark Side song brought me from one side of the earth to the other side. So
nice.
True, that is true.
So I could say hello. So I could say hello to LA.
There you go. Yep. And you've been here ever since.
It was a writing trip in 2010, and you know, at that time, I already was very fortunate and very grateful to have a lot of hits in Germany and in Europe, and it was clear that I wanted to go to America. I always loved American music, and I always had a sense for it, and I always tried to convince my publisher to fund me travels to the States, and they won't do that. So they said, oh no, come on, let's stay here. Let's stay here in Germany. You're good here. Why don't you develop that? I said, I want to develop that, but I want to go to America and do big songs. I don't want to, just copy American songs. I just want to create something new. And so in 2010, at that writing trip, we were like, I met a great friend of mine, the songwriter and producer Busby. Okay. And we wrote that song together in 2-3 hours. And after that, I was so excited about it because I knew this is a very special song. This is not like the usual song you write on a day or in between 2 days or whatever. This was a very special song. And I'm so happy that everyone else saw that too. And this was also the one who let my wife and me decide, come on, let's go to the States. Let's give it a try.
Cool. So that was an undertaking you took. And I wonder if it was one of those where they didn't want to let you go because they might lose you to a different agency, maybe. So.
That's what I thought of me upon hearing.
Yeah. So. You know, it's like always, it has always different sides. Some people definitely were like, what do you do? You have such a great life here. Why do you want to give it up? Also people from working areas and of course the family. It's hard to live in another continent and you see your parents are growing older. So you definitely miss out on stuff. But honestly, it was the best decision of my life. I'm here so happy. Okay. And I'm very proud to say that this year we are becoming American citizens.
Oh,
and,
nice. Yeah. Very cool. One of the things for April, just kind of, and her boyfriend, he's studying composition as well. He wants to be a composer. And he wants to eventually move out to Hollywood or the LA area as well. April, she wants to actually play in the symphonies and orchestras for soundtracks. And I kind of, that's equivalent of being like in the NFL or a professional sport. You have to be on top of your game all the time because there's always somebody after your chair.
Right.
But you kind of explained a little bit of this, but how much of a stressful situation of your time of life with that transition? Because she's even talking she would like to go overseas to perform with orchestras and symphonies as well. But you kind of mentioned that with your family. And of course, they're not, don't have a extended family. But how was that like moving over here? Were the contacts, did you have to do that all yourself? Or did you have an agent that went out and made contacts for you? Kind of explain how that was for you when you first came over here.
So the first time I was still published, you know, I was one of the very first signings of BMG back in Germany. You know, this is the new BMG is a German company. So I was one of their really first signings back in 2008, 2009. And actually with their help and with their contacts, I got over here. Okay. But already, you know, Since I was starting to scoring movies in 2007, 2008, I already slowly transitioned to be not only a songwriter, but also a composer and a TV score guy. So I knew that BMG could help me maybe for the first time, but at a certain point here in America, you have to be unpublished to be in the film and TV world. So it was all like a big transition. And I must say, even after 7 years, there are some parts which are still, you know, like still hard to transition to. And that's how it all started. Like I had first big help from BMG, and then I met my manager up till today, Jonathan Gordon, who's an amazing, great, talented connector, and like he's a hustler. So, like he goes out, he picks up the phone, and he calls like all the people who are important, gets them to me in the studio, and so I always had team players around me. I think otherwise today you can't do it. You always need somebody, at least one person or one agent, who cheers for you. Otherwise, like you have the chance to not be heard for the rest of your life. So,
okay. And when you found your manager, how, I don't know how it's structured in Los Angeles area by any means. We're landlocked in the middle of the country. But when you went there, what was I going to ask now? God, I went blank. Oh, I went blank while I was asking. I'm getting too old for this. I don't know. what was I going to ask? Jonathan, help me.
When you came to America, something.
No, it was the manager. Oh, I'll think about it later. Let's go on to something different. I'll have to come back to that, Alex. I'm sorry. I just went completely blank there.
All fine, man. All good.
You've come over, you've done a variety of different things, and we've listened to a variety of things as well. Some of the stuff we really key into is the comic book aspect, the animation, mm-hmm. sci-fi, stuff like that. With your composing, I'm going to hit a little bit on the animated side of it right now. And what we opened up with is the Woody Woodpecker, the main theme. Mm-hmm. And you've done other themes. You've been working on Trolls. You've worked on Voltron. How is it for a composer? You're taking properties that have existed before. You're wanting to keep it similar, but yet different at the same time. How is that when you're actually sitting down and composing? How difficult is that?
I said, there's one story. You mentioned Voltron, right?
Yes.
So here we have the absolute culture clash story.
Okay.
Because you Americans, you grew up with Voltron, okay. But us in Europe, we didn't have it.
Okay.
So I grew up on Masters of the Universe and other territories, but, and this is not a lie, the first time I ever heard from Voltron in my life was when I received from DreamWorks the theme song pitch.
Okay.
So it was the luck of a stupid guy like me, because I was like, oh, that sounds amazing. How cool is that? Oh, I have an idea to that. And then I had I just had a melody idea in my head, and I put it straight into my DAW, and I was working on it a couple of hours to mm-hmm. make it presentable and nice and sweet and stuff.
Right.
And then I sent it over, and they said, oh, wow, that's amazing. That's actually exactly what we're looking for. It was just the luck of somebody. Sometimes it's great to not know what property you're touching. So in this case, it was not difficult because I didn't know anything about it. And
nice. But with the Woody Woodpecker theme, you kept the same similar theme from the older cartoons. I think even Trolls had a similar theme from their older series as well, it seemed like, because I recognize the tune. But when you're doing similar stuff like that, is it, and such short entries. You know, these are some of your clips are 30 seconds to a minute to a minute and a half. Is it more difficult to compress it into that short of a time frame compared to a actually piece that's a couple of minutes long or a full suite that is really big and elaborate?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's different. Like for in Trolls, actually, we're not using anything from the movie property. Also, we're not allowed to use so much. So the score I create for Trolls is a complete unique, which I compose and always, of course, with the executive producer of the show, Matt Beans, and with the music team of DreamWorks, they are all involved in developing it together. And I love to develop it together with them because they're great people. And so this was a kind of very unique approach. And in Woody Woodpecker, I mean, the theme is there. It was a big question. How can you translate that into today? And it was not the first attempt, which you hear in the feature. And it was not the second one. So much I can tell you. we tried just to create something which fits not only today, but where director Alex Zamm also said, you know, he always said from the beginning, Woody is a troublemaker, and I want that it reflects in the music, in the songs. And so we try, you know, we try to keep a little bit of an angry guitar, but and make a beat which is more, you know, 2018 than 1944. Okay. So, true. But also, and this is a very new thing. I just signed on creating the score for 10 Woody Woodpecker 2D shorts, which Alex is directing, and there we possibly will use a complete different, like we will use, of course, the same theme, right, but we will create a different version of it, which fits more to the 2D style. So this is this is an adventure which Alex and I are doing right now, and I think we found something which we both like. So we're into the procedure of doing right now.
Okay, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You guys want to jump in at any time, you more than welcome to. Just remember, speak loud so Alex can hear you.
Yeah,
I'm more of the music guy. So
yeah, after April got gone.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering why I'm doing most of that,
I did like pretty much all your stuff. That is true, but yeah. Dad's pretty much the one that's going to be.
And it's pretty much Logan and I, we do listen to scores. I'm not sure. Do you listen to a lot of scores, Jonathan? Or you're kind of,
I do not. Okay. Like a lot of times it's just like, oh, I like the music.
Right.
But that's you're about.
More into something that has lyrics to it.
Yeah. I'm more like, I mean, I've listened. I mean, I can if I have to.
Okay.
But it's not something that I would do.
Okay. And that's fine. There are, you know, people all have their likes. But one of the things that, and you can kind of comment on this, Alex, I can't take credit for this. A gentleman by the name of Jason Swank said this on a different podcast. And kind of when we have composers, because we had one other composer on once before, but he kind of made the analogy that the soundtracks today for movies and the TV shows, that's becoming our classical music of today, which will be classical in the future. And I was wondering what your thoughts about that were. Do you kind of see that as well, or do you have a different little slant on it?
You know, classical music was always very elite, right? It was always reserved to a certain kind of people who, you know, who really understood and who really wanted to deal with it. Like, it's nothing for the big masses, and it was never a big mass thing. And I feel for me, it will be always two pair of shoes, so I can't really agree with it, because I don't think that film music has anything to do with classical music. Film music is not necessarily the best ever composed music in your whole life, which you will ever hear. Okay. Because film music always, you know, I always try to say about myself, I'm not a film composer or TV composer. I'm a filmmaker, and I help the director and producer, you know, just tell something about, just help to get their story right from a musical standpoint. Okay. And sometimes, even if you try to be melodical, it kills any dialogue. So you can't compare any, you know, even when you take John Williams' big idols like Barber, for example. You can't compare Barber to Williams because it's a complete different mindset, and and Williams is a fantastic filmmaker, and I think that's why his scores work so amazing, and he also created his very big scores in a time where melodies were so big and so wanted in scores. Like right now, I have the impression right now. Film scoring gets to a point where a lot of supervisors love to use more and more songs, and more and more a kind of a moody score comes in movies. And with a few exceptions, like Ready Player One, where Alan Silvestri was get a fantastic melodies, like in the 80s or in the 90s, which he did. You know, and classical music, like from the most epochs, are so much about melodies and about structure. So I think these are really two very different shoes.
Okay. All right. And you mentioned working closely with the directors of whether the shows or films. When do you come in? Do you come like midway through, at the end? And then how closely do you work with the director and the give and take of that? And you know, you mentioned the song aspect. So it's more like today's students coming out need to have a song background as well as a composing background. So can you go into that maybe a little bit?
Oh, it's very, very different. Like with the directors, I also have already, you know, good relationships, and we worked already a couple of times together. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if score or songs, you get involved at a very early stage. Like you get involved when the first script is done. Because a lot of directors just love a composer's standpoint and love to have like kind of a input from the musical side. If you say, hey, I hear this and this and this and that, wait, let me get you a little piece on spec, like a little overture, so you can hear, so you can just have a glimpse of what is expecting you maybe later. So that's what I love to do for my director friends. Or in a production, like in a big production like Trolls, The Beat Goes On, you have like every day a spotting session. Then you really come in like in post, and you know, you have a spotting session with the executive producers like every week, and my assistant write notes, and we have like 1 week to turn it all around. And it's not so much time, but you get used to it. You know, you just get faster.
Okay. I was going to say, that's a quick turnaround sometimes.
And of course, when you're working in animation and doing a lot of songs, like I have some productions which are coming up where I know they won't be on TV or film until late 2019, but we are now already creating songs for that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's animation always takes, it doesn't even matter if it's 2D or 3D animation, it always takes quite a bit of time. So if you, especially when you try to create current songs, you need to create songs which maybe are still from Valiant in the end of 2019, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, really? Then you got to wait before you can tell anybody what you did sometimes, too. Mm-hmm. Gotta keep it under wraps.
Of course.
We've kind of talked more about the composing side of it to kind of jump to the song part of your profession, because like I said, I didn't realize there was as much song writing as you've alluded to. It's kind of a new concept to me, but you've kind of worked on some different songs that you have featured and some that's been in features. Just kind of get your feel of what you like as music. When we went through your superhero music, it had more of a hard rock feel to it, except for one particular piece called, I believe it was Vapor, was a little bit more of a ballad. And then, of course, you had your anime stuff is for the movies is more of a pop side, like for Ice Age 5 and The Nut Job, it's a little bit more pop. What's your, I know it's kind of hard to say what's your favorite, but if you're just listening in the car, what do you usually listen to? What do you kind of lean towards?
It's very weird.
okay.
I tried to circle it somehow, but you know, I'm listening right now, just from what I'm listening right now, and I'm listening right now to James Newton Howard's a soundtrack of Red Sparrow, where he wrote like as a belly suite. It's beautiful. And in the next moment, I'm listening, you know, I'm listening to Selena Gomez and modern pop hits. I adore Charlie Puth. I think his new album is absolutely amazing. And both James Newton Howard and Charlie Puth is for me something which in my world absolutely works together and inspires, like when I compose and when I have to compose big orchestral symphonic stuff, I'm inspired also by pop music I'm listening to, because when you listen to modern film music, so much is in the end, you know, has a big pop structure just blown up to orchestral. that's also a big thing why film music and classical music, you know, are very, very different things.
Okay.
And also the other way around, like when I write pop songs, I'm feeling inspired by big classical composers just from their structure, from their harmonic sensibility. It's just, you know, who said it doesn't go together? Like I have two classical musicians and as parents, and my dad loves Shostakovich and loves to play Shostakovich cello concerto. But with me, he was listening to the Beatles, to Streisand, and to all other, to Bowie, you know, like, I think in our household, there was no, like, there was only good or bad music. And that's how I try to, that's what I try to educate to my kids. It's just no, like, Charlie Puth is not bad music, and Shostakovich is good music. It's like, you know, either you like it or not.
Okay. So basically, if you're well-rounded, that's what you need to be in your profession. It's better to be that way. All right. Absolutely. And I mentioned Vapor. One of the other songs from the Superior, I don't know, I guess subset was, I believe it was Electric for a Day. So there are some of those in there. But I mentioned Ice Age 5. You did My Superstar with Jesse J. And with Nut Job 2, you did Everybody Get Nuts with Luke Edgman. You've had I think it was All Hail King Julian. Mm-hmm. You actually got nominated. Makes you go, we not stopping, never know. Who's the king that makes you move? Who's the one that boom, boom? Party, party, rain or shine. Who's the king that keeps it fly?
This is All Hail King Julian, the DreamWorks TV show. I had the theme song, and that got me Emmy nominated.
Oh, it's like, there you go. That's nice. So it's like, and that's one of the things where a lot of people, it's like we mentioned on one episode, it's like just being nominated. That is so great. It's like, that's difficult.
It's amazing, and I'm so grateful. Yeah. But when you're in, that room, then you won't win. every humor went away. You're just in that moment, just thinking, "I want to win. I want to win. I want to." And then Dora the Explorer won.
Oh, man!
And then and then it's gone. And then you just think, "Wow." Then you think again, what an honor to be nominated. So that stays, and it's beautiful.
But you know, if you've done it once, you can get there again. So, and you got the chops. Yeah. You got the chops to get there.
Mm-hmm. No,
but
yeah.
We've already mentioned you haven't been with Kelly Clarkson, but your wife might say something about that. But but you have done a song that Kelly Clarkson performed. You've also worked with her on a Christmas special for Home with a bunch of other individuals. But some of the others you've had with Home as well. You've had Rachel Crowe, but then probably the one that I was like, oh my gosh, is Cher.
Yeah.
Are you sharing the studios when you are with these individuals, or do you just send them the tracks and then they record on top of the tracks, or are you actually physically with them?
Oh, it's very, very, it's a great question because it's very different. For example, Jesse J, we recorded over my studio, but she was in London and I was in LA. Okay. So we had a Skype connection and we did it. Like, it was, the quality was amazing. Lucky, and
probably much better than this one.
Like,
Probably much better than this one.
No. This is great, but we were like connected through my studio speakers and everything. It was really, really amazing. So we could give her notes in real time. Like, honestly, which notes we gave her? It was like, oh, great. Or amazing. Like, what do you want to say to one of the best singers in the world? Like, right. She's killing it anyway. So, and that's what happened. And with Cher, it was like, Cher is a very, very hardworking, amazing superstar. Like, I was with her on the phone and we talked about the song, which I wrote for her with one of my executive producers of the show. And she had like some ideas and she wanted to work in. So we went back and forth on telephone, but we never, you know, connected in person. But she was like doing, like working all the stuff we were talking about. She presented me a vocal, which was so great. It was full, like she, there was actually a nice fine side story to that, because that's actually really funny, because I was really excited and I didn't know what to do when people told me, hey, you're going to work with Cher. And I'm like, oh my God, how do I demo my song for Cher? Because I usually work with a lot of, you know, younger women, younger men. Okay. And also I didn't want to hire an older woman to, you know, to kind of demo the sound of Cher to Cher. Okay. So I was thinking, how do you demonstrate it to Cher? Because she's so special. And, you know, there are so many people who act satirically, who try to copy her voice and blah, blah, blah. And I think I didn't want it. So I demoed it myself. Mm-hmm. I sang the demo myself. And thought, and this was a success, because I was a man. I wasn't even copying any phrasing. I left it completely open. Okay. And she heard it and wasn't. Yeah, she took it and took it to her own and made it 10 times better than it was, because that's what a superstar does.
True. Mm-hmm. And I assume this was for Ooga Booga?
Ooga Boo.
Ooga Boo, okay.
Ooga Boo.
What'd she think of that when she actually got that with the title? I was like, did she go
she
back?
She also had some dialogue lines. And okay. My executive producer, Ryan Kriegel, he told me the story that she came and she had all her dialogue and was amazing. And 1 week later, she called him and said, hey, you know what? I can do better. Can I come in again? And so that separates like a star from a superstar, because she's like, she wanted to make it better and better and better and better. And that's how that's what I experienced with her in my work too. She wanted to make it better. And this was a once in a lifetime experience.
Really? That's cool. Yeah. Well, it might not be a once. You might, you know, you got that in. She can do some more stuff for you now.
This episode with Cher was Annie nominated in this year. So.
Cool. So that is very cool. So there's one question. I think, was it on... I'm digging through my notes, so give me a moment here, Alex. Go ahead, Logan.
One for a while he's going through. Have you ever done anything with games? Or ever had any, like, video games?
I haven't done video games yet. But I'm totally interested.
Nice.
Okay. So you're not against that? Because they're starting to get more soundtracks out now, too.
Mm-hmm. Games have great soundtracks. You know, I sometimes play with my daughters, but very, very little. I think I'm more a TV addict.
Yeah, but understandable. I'm afraid I'm probably in your generation. I definitely know I'm either in your generation or older. So I was on the cusp of technology. I know enough to get in trouble, but I never got into video games. But my cousin that's just 1 year younger, he did. So go figure.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. It's from your showreel clips that you sent us. I wanted to kind of comment on a few of these, and I don't know if you'll remember some of these, but see what you think, if you can remember, because sometimes I don't know how long ago you've done these. And you've had one of the ones I mentioned here is the Z-Burbs Zombie Action, and it's only a 49-second clip, and it comes in really bombastic. But then you do something at the end of it with the instruments, and I cannot even begin to tell you what instruments they were. And I don't know if you did this intentionally or not, but it kind of sounded like you were emulating the sounds of what zombies would make at the end.
It sounded like what? Sorry?
You were like how zombies would sound, how they're groaning and everything. At the very end, when it got really quiet and those instruments, it kind of sounded like a little bit of the moaning that they would do. And I don't know if that was intentional or not.
I see it as a huge compliment. No, the director, Greg Sikowski, and I, we definitely were looking for a zombie sound which hasn't been there yet. Like, you know, the classic zombie sound in classic big horror movies, it's defined by, you know, by some big scrapes and big, like, effects. Right. We were looking for, like, a tone, because it was not just only a zombie horror film, it was a zombie comedy.
Okay.
So we're looking for a certain sound which makes, you know, which makes the zombies also a little bit comedic, and this was quite a challenge. But we came up with something which we both ended up, which everyone liked. So,
okay.
So I'm happy that it translates.
Well, I just caught that at the end. I was like, wow, that's neat how that was accomplished. So
awesome.
And then you've just to kind of put out there, you've worked on Pitch Perfect 3.
Yes.
And the ones you worked on, the clips that you did, I'm going to kind of do the dinghy to Dongo and the boat nap. Yeah. It feels, and I have not seen the movie yet. I've just seen the trailers. But
yeah,
just by looking at the trailers and listening to those pieces, you know, they go to the boat kind of like a spy venture type thing. And the music conveyed that really nicely. So I'm assuming that's the scenes. Am I correct in assuming that, or am I misplaced? That,
absolutely. Like in Pitch Perfect 3, I had the honor to write a lot of additional music for my friend Chris Leonard. And this is one of the cues we wrote together. Like in Pitch Perfect 3, there's, you know, like every big brand, you have to reinvent yourselves. And as the first two parts were really, you know, really playing in college and the rivalry between the a cappella groups. Wow. So there is a, without spoiling too much, there's a spy twist in part three of Pitch Perfect, right. And which is pretty awesome and very unexpected, and it takes a big part of the movie. So I love the spy genre. Like, this is one of my favorite genres to work in. I love James Bond and everything around it. Kingsman. My game, and it was so fun to create this kind of very modern spy music, and of course influenced by movies, you know, like the Bourne movies and The Italian Job and stuff. Like, I love these movies.
So then I'm guessing if you got the chance to write for a spy movie, you'd jump right at it.
Yes. I wouldn't think too much about it. That's true. Totally.
A couple more here, just some comments on some of them that I really appreciated. An Almost Perfect Man, Strange World. It's just a 31-second clip, but this one I don't know where it came from or anything, but it really felt like a contemplation piece that could be placed within a superhero genre movie. So I really dug that really well. I really appreciated that. And awesome. Just a couple of more, just my thoughts. And like I said, to the audience out there listening, we'll do some special shows just spotlighting Alex's music, and so you can hear pieces of it. The 49-second ones, you might be able to hear the whole ones, but the longer ones, we just do clips. But you have A New Land. This was just a demo, but I thought it was interesting that it started out with it felt like a Catholic Church influence, but then it kind of took this twist after the intro, and it almost felt like it could almost be fit into a sci-fi movie where they're coming upon a planet and they're experiencing a new world, and then it had a little bit of an Irish twist to it as well later on.
You see, that's funny. So you try one time in your life to be medieval, and then Irish movie. No, but I love what you see in it. Like the demo was for a specific movie which had like a medieval Middle Eastern element in it. And I didn't want to be too Middle Eastern, so I totally get the Irish influences. I know which part you mean. Like, there is something which sounds more Irish than medieval. So maybe, yeah, you know, it's funny. Also in demos, there is nothing in our world which is a demo nowadays. You don't demo. You just do something on spec. If the people like it, they take it. If not, not. But what I wanted to say is you need, even if you don't have an orchestra at your fingertips, you need to make every little snippet sound the best possible. So this demo status is something maybe which was lost in the 80s. After that, there was no demo status existing. Yeah.
You just said that, you know, a lot of the times you just put it out there and they take it. How many of your projects have you put out there that have been rejected?
Great question, because let's go back to my year 2014. It was a terrible year. Like in 2014, I was still transitioning. My manager connected me already with some TV people, but I was just starting to build connections. And in this year, I had 15 pitches for shows, for theme songs, for everything. And I was putting all my money and all my heart into that. Mm-hmm. And I lost 14 of these 15 mm-hmm. pitches. And the one I won, that was All Hail King Julian. That was the one who got me Emmy nominated. And that was the one who got me into DreamWorks. Okay, and nice. Literally a month later, I had a pitch for the show Home Adventures with Tip and O, which I won and which I scored for 4 seasons. Season 4 is coming out in end of July.
Okay.
And that led, again, to Voltron, to other things, and to, you know, to the build to my current situation, which I really am. I'm super happy and there's, sometimes you have nothing but the belief in yourself, but when you don't have the belief in yourself, then you're really lost. So I was never losing the belief in myself, so that was possibly my strength, but that was a really tough year for me, like, yeah.
So definitely have to develop a thick skin, and like you said, be willing to go on, so.
Right.
With students coming up, we've kind of mentioned that as well, but what do you suggest them to do when they're composing? Is there a, I don't know how to ask this. If Nathan was here, he could probably ask it a whole lot better. Is it just to experiment with everything, or how would the student go about just learning the craft?
You know what, you mean like what I suggest to younger composers, so right. People who want, yeah, so it's very simple, because what is a film director? A film director is somebody who directs movies.
Okay.
And so in that moment, you're not dreaming anymore being a film director. In that moment, you take your camera in the hand and you film, then you're a film director. That's the same thing with composer. In that moment where you dream about it and talk about it, you're not a composer. You need to get down and compose and start doing, you know, like start doing in any genre, anything you feel, and start to build a portfolio of stuff you composed. Because that's the only, no party in the life where you're going to, no connection will bring you further than your work. And that's what I always experience. You don't make business on parties. You maybe meet some people on parties, but those people, at some point, they want to hear your music. And that's where the reality comes through. So either you meet them or not, or you can also send them your music. You know, you have to work. Like I would say, work on your music and try to get it better every day, because that's where you succeed the most, in your little room with your little speakers, with your little laptop.
And that's pretty much where he's at the moment. So. But another follow-up question with that one is, when do you just say enough, stop tinkering with a composition, or do you keep tinkering with it? How does it come? I'm not a composer, so I don't know the composer's mind. Do you keep tinkering, or is there a point where you have to just say, that's it, that's where it's going to stay?
You totally have to decide from the beginning, before you even start to compose, that this is it. there's decisions, I think, especially when you do TV, like high-paced TV composing, like I do in the moment. Like I'm delivering right now, like 40 minutes a week of music for two different shows. That's a lot. Okay. And there is not much room to make decisions. You need to decide, I go with this, I go with that. Also knowing you get revisions back, so you always, the better and the faster your decisions are, the less revisions in the end you're getting later. So it's sometimes, and sometimes you don't even hit it right, then you get revisions anyway. So that happens too, but you need to have, like, the bigger your composing window is, the more weapons you know and how to choose them wisely, okay, the better and the faster you get. So, yeah, I wish I'd be faster than I am. So, but I think everyone who works weekly in TV wants to be faster and better. And so I think that's something natural given.
Okay, cool. To let everybody know, is there a way for people to follow what you are doing? Like either a Facebook page just for your compositions or what work you're working on? Or, I mean, how accessible sociably are you? I don't want to do personal accounts because I know that's your personal stuff. But is there any professional accounts that they can follow you on?
Oh, yeah. I have an Instagram account and a Facebook account. You can definitely... there's space to follow me on my activities. I mainly use them for my professional activities, and sometimes I'm overposting some pictures of my daughters, but you know, they're cute.
So just look up your name and then they can send you a request that way.
Yeah, no, but this is like my sites, Alex, like I think I'm Facebook and Instagram, it's both Alex Geringas, and you can definitely.
How often do you work with young composers? Is that an aspect that you try to do, or do you just kind of give them encouragement? How do you do that part of your composition life?
With younger composers?
Yes, that are just getting in. Do you do a lot with them trying to help them out, or do you kind of...
Yeah, actually my manager and I, we have on a non-exclusive basis, but we have some younger composers under us who we try to get into business, who we're helping out, who we, you know, I'm getting meanwhile, a lot of pitches, which I simply can't do all by myself. So we handpicked some people which we think are super talented. They're all more talented than me anyway. And we try to get them into our footsteps. And we were lately pretty successful with that. One of my composers has the theme to a big Steve Harvey show. One other composer has a new Disney theme, and these are all like relationships we got them into, and now they start building from that. So the composer who got the Steve Harvey theme has meanwhile like cues in over like 5-6 shows. So, you know, we definitely try to build and help. This is something which is somehow, my dad is not only a fantastic cellist and conductor, he's also a fantastic teacher who's still teaching at the Manhattan School of Music in New York and also in Berlin, where my parents live. And somehow in my DNA to feature younger composers. Also, I have a fantastic assistant. I just hired him because he's better than me. And
come now.
You know what I'm trying to say. Like he's an amazing. I feel like of course he not only knows all the technical side like 200%. His name is, by the way, Karam Salem, so you better remember that name. But he also is a great film composer himself, and sometimes when the projects are coming in, I also let him do, of course, some little cues here and there, and he does a great job in it. And also, he just pitched for his first DreamWorks show, so I hope he gets that, because his pitch was exceptional, in my opinion. And yeah, I'm, you know, of course, like, the more people from your team succeed and are great, the more you can succeed, because filmmaking and especially music making is always a big team effort. And I love that. I love to work with music departments, with the people, with my assistants, and you know, it's a very big part of my life to develop younger people.
Yeah, that's cool of you to do that. Which kind of brings me back to the question I forgot earlier.
Great. <remembered it. laughs>
If somebody's just coming out there to the area, is there, you know, there are agents and managers, but are there specific agents that they need to look for composition rather than acting, or are they kind of all blended together?
Oh no, there are there are amazing agencies for only composers.
Okay.
There are some big companies where they have like different departments, but there are also only film composer agencies for sure.
Okay. Because that was the question I lost earlier in the visit, so we worked back around long enough that I remembered.
So if this does get into two parts, they'll be just left in suspense.
I think that's pretty much it, Alex.
Awesome.
Do you have any future projects you want to let anybody know to kind of keep their ear open for that you're working on, or is that kind of need to be kept under wraps?
We would do this like 1 week later. I maybe could talk about the film I just signed on. It's just right now. I was recently working on Uncle Drew, also with my friend Chris Leonards. And like I said, the Woody Woodpecker stuff I'm set to score in August.
Okay.
And there are some other projects I unfortunately can't talk at this point about.
It's understandable. Like, we understand. Really
great projects with a lot of score and a lot of songs involved. So I'm keeping true to my line, which I went in the last 2-3 years. So.
Well, understandable, because I know in the business, you know, you have to sign those agreements where you can't say anything until a certain date.
Non-disclosure.
Yep. One thing I can talk about, I just got a new theme song for a new Nick Jr. show called Rainbow Rangers.
What Rangers?
Wow. Rainbow? That's interesting.
Rainbow Rangers is an upcoming show at Nick Jr.
Huh.
And I just scored the themes. I just got the theme song for it. And yeah.
Okay. Huh. Have to look into that. That's an interesting title. So, so, but that's going to pretty much do it. Alex, we've had fun. Hopefully you've had fun visiting with us as well.
Thanks so much.
Everybody, again, we've been visiting with Alex Gringas. He's out in L.A. working his fingers to the bone, composing and making songs for the business industry out there. Been in over here, you said, for 7 years. So, you know, don't give up if that's what your dreams are. Go for it. Alex is proof that it can happen. Keep working. But definitely, if Alex said, you can go to his Facebook account or Instagram, look up his name and friend him there. He'd be glad to have you and help you out if he can, or at least answer questions possibly later on. But again, Alex, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Richard, for having me. That was a lot of fun.
And I apologize for all the rigmarole getting this all set up. Definitely appreciate your patience.
It was all amazing, and I heard you very well.
All right. Everybody, we hope you've been enjoying our visit with Alex Gringas. We've been having fun. Hopefully everybody out there has been having fun listening. We'll catch everybody on the flip side. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye to everyone.
Life's a game of hiding and seek, and what you find makes you unique. Spent my life searching for you, but found something else, not ooga boo. Here's a message from Oahu. You call me, you find your ooga boo. Here's a message from Oahu. You call me, you find your ooga boo. You are Bing's friend, I never knew.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.